another night in a row. This has been coming to repeat for me. But I didn't let me tell me she won't. And it's alright to pretend that we.
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington, presented by EMP 180 Weight Loss. Structure, accountability, results. The standard for weight loss in the area. It's EMP180weightloss.com. Got a lot going on the show today. Sean Devaney's going to join us from the Sporting News. He's an NBA writer. We'll talk about what's going on in the NBA playoffs. Both series now at 3-2. The Rockets up on Golden State, which is a surprise. And the Celtics up on Cleveland, also a surprise. Brett Connolly from the Caps will join us at 8:40. Winger for the Capitals, so we will start talking about the Caps Lightning series. But join us right now to talk some movies is Kevin McCarthy, entertainment reporter for Fox 5. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, JP. Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. And I do want to say, and I know I normally do movie reviews, and there's only one major film opening up today, which is the Solo film. But and I know I don't normally do music reviews, but if you guys can give me a minute at some point in the segment, I want to talk about the new Pusha T album, because I'm from 757, and he's a rapper that I kind of grew up in high school listening to, and I want to talk about it. It's a big album right now.
You've got to be kidding. Is he doing a bit?
I don't think he's doing that.
No.
Huh?
Not doing a bit at all.
Can you give us your top three celebrities, athletes from the 757?
You're from the 757? You got to be kidding
me. There's no way he can name who's from there.
Well, he probably should.
Wait. What do you ask? Athletes and or celebrities and rappers, or just athletes?
The most famous people from the 757. Since you've said you're part of the 757.
What do you mean you're from the 757? What is
Kevin, is this your first time on the show?
Do you know how easy that is? So it's Michael Vick.
Okay.
I can go football player. I can go Pharrell Williams. I can go Missy Elliott. I can go Timbaland. I can go Clips. I can go Malice. Pusha T. I can go.
So it's pretty good, actually.
You going?
So it's a lot of hip hop artists from the 757.
Yeah. Well, you guys are disrespecting.
You got to throw him in too.
You don't think I'm a hip hop fan? I've been a hip hop fan all my life.
I know you are stupid, but you know that. How many people do you go around telling? I mean, I am too, but I don't go around telling people I'm from the 301.
That's not what I meant. See, what you're misunderstanding is when I got on the segment today, I was trying to explain to Drab before I went on the air why I wanted to talk about Pusha T's new album.
Right? Because I asked him, Kevin. I said, can you ask Kevin if he saw any other movies besides Solo? And then you threw him for a loop, because I was in the production studio with the producers. You threw him for a loop and said, no, only Solo. So we were expected to just talk about the movie Solo. And then he said, but I'd like to throw in my Pusha T review. And that threw us for a loop.
Yeah. I know it sounds crazy because I never talk about music on the show, but I was just trying to explain my reasoning as to why I wanted to talk about the album. It's because I'm from that area and I grew up listening to Clips, so I just wanted to talk about it. That's all.
Right. One Clip song, if you can find. I have no idea what their most famous song.
Probably Grindin'.
Yes, Grindin' is a great song.
Grindin'?
Great intro.
Yeah. You ever seen a grinder?
You can play that. So tell us about Pusha T before you get to Solo. Because
trying to get like street cred or something?
I don't know. Strange.
He's actually brought in music a while back. It's because he's an entertainment reporter for Fox 5.
Are you doing that for Fox 5? Are you reviewing Pusha T's album on Fox 5?
I woke up this morning and I listened to the 7-track album and I was like, I want to talk about it. If you go to Twitter right now, it is the most trending topic. Right. In the world, in the country. Okay. So I'm not reviewing some random album.
It's bigger than the North Korea deal.
What kind of suit do you have to go with the Pusha T release?
Yeah, honestly, that would be really cool if I had a Clip suit, man. A Hell Hath No Fury or a Lord Willen suit.
Next week, Kevin's going to do his review. He's going to be wearing a grill.
See, he started doing this. If you remember, he started doing this Kendrick Lamar. Like, he started sliding in Kendrick Lamar's album, changed his life.
I know. No, listen, I know that Kevin is a hip-hop fan. Yes. He's a music fan. I get it. I don't even think he's being fake. But he's being fake when he says he's from the 757.
Yeah. You're part of a
different 757.
Yeah.
Part of it was to, it was my explanation as to why I wanted to talk about it.
I'm guessing.
I've never seen the Norfolk area.
I've never seen the home you grew up in.
Norfolk.
But I'm guessing you didn't grow up next door to Michael Vick or
Missy Elliott. You know, actually, JP, Michael Vick's uncle lived across the street from me, and he came over and played basketball all the time. He was always at the house.
Did you show him your jackknife?
Yeah.
I actually never I never went outside and spoke to him. He was always with his family, and I guess Marcus is his brother.
Right.
They were all outside playing basketball.
Hey, I know this. Hey, Kevin, beat you. If you haven't played,
did you ever go to his dog fights?
Kevin?
No. And if I ever went to one of those, I would never do that.
Hey, make sure. Make sure you tweet Pusha T a picture of your concert ticket.
Do you do that?
Yeah,
bit?
No. Listen, I would love to see Pusha T live. I've actually never seen them live. I've seen Pharrell live. I've never seen Pusha
Malice.
Was
Pusha T part of Clips?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's
so Pusha, now he's a
Pusha
solo.
And Malice.
He's a solo. Like,
well, he's been a solo for a while. I mean, like, King Push. I mean, he's been Malice kind of stepped away from the from the music for a while, and now Push is doing his own thing. And Kanye, you guys can laugh at me all you want, but I know what I'm talking about. You guys can make fun of me all you want.
I do think you know what you're talking about.
Is Pusha T related to Jason's favorite rapper, Low T?
you guys make fun of me all you want.
Kevin, what movies are out there?
I only saw Solo.
Solo.
By the way, your hair is particularly high this morning. If you're watching on NBC Sports Washington, he's got daddy tall hair.
I'm jealous of your hair game.
By the way, I couldn't. Cakes, I was so ecstatic for you the other night when the Caps won. I didn't watch the game because I was sleeping. But when I woke up the morning and saw that they won, you're the first person I thought of. Man,
thank you, buddy.
Happy for you.
Very good.
All right, Kevin Solo. I know this, that there was a change of director halfway through the movie production. Tell us about Solo, which is a prequel in the Star Wars movies. I don't know. You can't call it a trilogy anymore.
Star Wars universe, I guess.
Whatever it is.
He just left. They lost him. We're just going to call him.
We got his Pusha T review. He didn't even give his review.
Oh, they lost him like with the satellite or whatever? All right. Kevin,
Papa
are you there?
Squeezy. JP, Papa Squeeze.
All right, so get to Solo.
Is the show over yet, Cakes?
Not yet.
Supposed to be a huge hit. Ron Howard took over as the director because it was a debacle before. Fill us in.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. So Star Wars is obviously a huge deal in my life, and Star Wars, the original trilogy and The Force Awakens are classics. That's like a certain level of Star Wars film that people, that fans expect. Solo kind of falls into that realm of Rogue One where it's fan service, it's fun. I wouldn't call it a classic by any means. I think that Alden Ehrenreich, who plays Solo in the film, is fantastic in the role. And people going into the movie, they're probably expecting an impersonation of Harrison Ford. It's nothing like that. This is a completely different Han Solo. We've never seen this particular version of him before because he's not that arrogant guy we've met so far in New Hope and in the cantina with the Greedo scene. This is a different Han Solo. He's vulnerable. He's scared. He's in love specifically with Emilia Clarke's character. So it's a very different type of character. So to me, that's why I liked the arc of seeing him become the Solo that we know. Action-wise, it does work. And JP, as you mentioned, there were two different filmmakers that were involved in the project initially. They shot a ton of the movie, actually, before they were let go from the film, Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Ron Howard then came in to finish the movie and reshoot the film, but some of their footage still exists. The movie script is where I had a lot of problems. There's a lot of scenes where they come up with the names of characters that you already know, and I really hate when films do that because it kind of calls attention to the fact that you're watching a movie that's highlighting famous storylines in Solo that we've known before. But that being said, the pacing also is affected in the middle and towards the end. That aside, performances are amazing. The action's fantastic. It really does look great. I think Tandy Newton and Woody Harrelson are fantastic. Jon Favreau did a great job as well. I mean, it works. It's a passably fun, entertaining Star Wars film, but it's nothing that you're going to walk away from and go, man, that was one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. It's fine. I hate giving this rating on your show, but 3.5, that's what it is.
Well, because it's such a neutral, like, not you're not taking a side on it. You know what I mean?
I am. My rating for that would be positive It's a positive review.
What was the 3.5 on the original? I know that you've had to move away from this now because you go on TV nationally on Fox and you're on Fox 5 every morning. But originally, in the original Kevin McCarthy scale, what was a 3.5?
It was a matinee, so I wouldn't pay full. I wouldn't pay full ticket price. Can I at least just say if you're a hip hop fan, check out the Pusha album.
Yes,
Kanye
of
produced.
Course,
it's really good.
Back to Pusha T.
Just don't say you're from the 757. That's just humiliating.
You guys didn't even let me explain why I like the album. You guys, it's
all right,
a big
why do you like the album? Go ahead.
You're gonna cut me off, aren't
you? No, I'm actually gonna let you do it. Actually, Kevin or Matt, don't play him off. Why do you like it?
Okay. Well, I think the album is really well done. Kanye produced it. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Kanye's production, but his most famous beat ever, in my opinion, was a takeover track he did for Jay-Z, which was part of the Nas and Jay-Z beef. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what put Kanye on the map. He took a Doors track and basically put it on, and Jay-Z rapped over it with Takeover, and then Nas did Ether, which was amazing. But to me, this album is more production-wise. I think Kanye's production overshadows Push's lyrics. One of my favorite albums ever is Hell Hath No Fury, which is a Clips album. It was Clips did that album and Lord Willin', which are phenomenal
he's
albums.
Basically, just showing off his hip hop knowledge right now. That's what you're doing.
But Hell Hath No Fury and Lord Willin' were produced by the Neptunes. That's Chad and Pharrell. To me, those albums were a perfect combination of production and lyrics.
This is too much.
It becomes too much.
He got his review in.
He did. Well, I don't even know that he did. He just started
3.5.
He got the movie review in, but he didn't really get.
That's what we care about.
All he did about the album was talk about the producers, and he didn't actually talk about the album. He just talked about.
He just listened to it this morning.
He was just talking. He was just showing off his knowledge.
Although I do get sites for producer jocking.
You do.
Yes, right. You do love that.
Being
You're a
producer.
Fan of that.
Yes.
70%
you're
right up there with Kanye West.
He's from the 757. I mean, is he serious with that?
He was rattling
I do like
off.
Kind of. We're from the 301.
From the 301. What's
who
up?
Do we have?
Who do we have?
Anybody from the 301?
Well, I'm sure we got a
definitely
lot of,
do.
What about Blink?
the rapper?
He's Blink? From the 202.
Yeah, he'd be 202.
Yeah, he's 202.
202
has tons
301,
of guys.
We got a lot of ballers, you know, PG County ballers through the years. I mean, well, of course. But
isn't Logic from Gaithersburg?
Yeah, but
yes.
Is that considered the 301?
I guess that's
a
301. That might be a
401. No, that's a 301.
Oh, it is.
Wale's from Montgomery County. That's where he was born.
Wale from the 301. He probably claims a 202.
He can be claimed.
He claims a 202, but he's really a 301. Yeah. He's embarrassed.
You know what? If you know out there, you can let us know who with street cred is from the 301. 800-636-1067. Remember, a little bit later, Brett Connolly from the Caps will join us. You don't want to miss that. That's at 840 here on the Junk.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106. I'm the Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. As I mentioned, Brett Connolly, right winger for the Capitals, will join us coming up at 8:40. We'll touch on the NBA Finals and what's going on in the playoffs with Sean Devaney shortly. He'll join us at 7:40. But we wanted to kind of touch on this Caps Lightning series. It's funny, we've been so focused on each round of the Caps series, whether it was Columbus, then Pittsburgh, and then, of course, the Tampa Bay Lightning, that we haven't paid really much attention to what's going on the other side. We were aware it was Winnipeg versus Vegas. But now it's time to kind of hone in on Vegas. And our buddy Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post and Crashing the Net, which you can listen to right here on 106.7 The Fan, wrote an article about whether the Caps should be the favorite in this series.
But in Vegas' terms, they're not, right? They're slight dogs. I'd rather be a dog.
The Capitals are a slight dog.
They were dogs in the last two series as well.
But he kind of went through each of the positions, and if you kind of break it down individually, when you look at the forwards, for example, obviously the Caps are led by Ovi and Kuzi, whereas the Golden Knights are led by William Karlsson, who had 43 goals. So he was third in the NHL with 43 goals, but obviously Ovi led the way with 49. And you look at the forwards there, and you would probably say, if you just went position by position, that the Caps have a slight edge. And you could probably do the same thing for the defensemen. The one spot which might be advantage Vegas is goalie. Now, Holtby's been great. Fleury's been better. Fleury in the playoffs, just the playoffs, 12-3 with a .947 save percentage. So he's stopping almost 95% of his shots. And he also just has the resume of three championships.
Right. I mean, it's hard to argue. But our guy's been pretty good, too.
I'd give Fleury the slight nod, but with the way Holtby's been playing, especially of late with the back-to-back shutouts, I love our chances with him in net.
Who are their studs? Like, who are their goal scorers? Who are their guys that
well,
light
the lamp? Carlson. Marchessault is a young stud for them as well.
He led the team with 18 points in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They're not the biggest names, you know, for casual hockey fans like us that we'd be familiar with.
What's kind of scary to me is I'm just looking at USA Today's preview, and their hockey experts break it down, and three of the four of them are picking the Caps. Kevin Allen has the Caps in six. Jimmy Haskup has the Caps in seven. Jace Evans has the Caps in six. And then the one of the four, Mike Brehm, is that how you say his name, Cakes? He has the Golden Knights in seven.
Let's throw it out to the callers. 800-636-1067.
I'd rather be the dog. Everyone disrespects.
I want to hear from Caps fans. Do you think they should be the favorite? So according to the fancy stats, and Neil Greenberg talked about a Pythagorean winning percentage, and it mixes some sort of metric with Corsica. 61% of the time, the Capitals should be favored in the series.
Well, whatever all those words mean, I like the fact that the Caps are coming out of the good end of it 61%
of the time. Now, it doesn't sound like a great percentage to me, because what it said is the most likely outcome, according to all the analytics, is Washington winning the series in six games. But that's just a 20% chance.
I don't know anything about the Pythagorean theorem. I when you say those words together, it doesn't mean anything to me.
Well, you know why Vegas made the Caps the dog and made the Golden Knights the favorite is because they're exposed more than six figures.
They're hedging.
Yes, they're hedging themselves because all the local donks have $10, $20 tickets
right
on the Knights at 500 to 1.
Right, there are a lot of outstanding bets that if the Golden Knights win the cup, they're going to be paying out a lot of dough.
So they're trying to push as much money as they can on the Caps in the series. And the way to do that is to make them an underdog, even though they should be favored by metrics.
Yeah,
the one area, approach.
You know, besides the goalie, and I guess it kind of goes hand in hand with the goalie, where Vegas does seem to have a pretty good advantage is on the penalty kill. Now, Washington, the Capitals, were perfect in 10 out of 19 games on the penalty kill, but Fleury has stopped 38 of 41 high-danger chances on the penalty kill. He has a .927 save percentage against opposing power plays. Even on power plays, he's been good. So his .927 compared to Holtby's .814, it's not even close.
I'm not banking that much on the Caps getting a ton of power plays. Because now in the Cup Final, I think the refs are going to be even worse as far as calling penalties.
Yeah, but the way it played out,
chances a game.
The way it played out in the last series was they seemed to call the games pretty normally for the first couple. And then as the series progresses, then they really swallow.
Right. I mean, to me,
I think in game one and two, I bet you it will be a fairly normally called game. It's after that where all hell breaks loose. That's what I observed.
I mean, you still had power play opportunities in game six. If it wasn't for the power play, Caps don't get that lead, that one
right.
zippy
well,
lead
one,
with
one
Ocean.
Power play is no big deal. But, I mean, I think in games one or two or three, a couple, right, there was like six or seven.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they averaged, Cakes brought up the stat in the first four games, I think there were 28 total power plays. So yep. It was seven per game.
Yeah, and after that, then they just shut it
drastically
down. They just stopped
like
calling
three.
Stuff. So the first couple games, I think it'll
I don't
be
know
normal.
If they're going to go but back also to some that of it, liberal calling policy.
You don't think it's just going to be normal?
I don't know.
In game
I don't know
one
if they're
and
gonna
two?
Do that.
I think it sets the tone. I think what they try to do is set the tone, and then after that, they kind of back off and get out of the way.
I mean, look, I don't know that much about Vegas other than what I've read.
They can't let them get chippy in game one.
I have a slight lean towards the Caps just because Vegas, I mean, is an expansion team really going to win the Stanley Cup Final?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they will.
I think they've already proven they're not an expansion team
they do have
the way
home
that, by
ice.
The way they play.
They do have home ice, but, you know, I'm kind of, you have that bias, like Ovi's finally broken through.
Yeah, yeah.
hoist the cup.
I have no idea who's going to win. I don't know anything about them other than what I read. You know, I don't watch them. But there is something, and I don't even believe in this.
Team of Destiny?
There's something to that.
But the Caps could be a team of destiny this year.
No, that's who I'm referring to.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Vegas.
No, no. I'm referring more so to the Caps.
I think you can make an argument for both.
Maybe you could.
It's a great narrative for both should either team win the Stanley Cup Final.
The team that fits the destiny model better to me is the Caps.
It has to be the Caps.
It's not the expansion team. The expansion team winning is a great story, but I don't see that as a team of destiny. They've only been around for 30 minutes.
It's amazing.
This is a team that's fought and fought and fought and been disappointed.
If there's any such thing as a hockey god or hockey karma, then the Caps are going to win the Stanley Cup because Alex Ovechkin is the greatest goal scorer of his generation, and hopefully he's going to lead them to where a lot of people thought he would have been 5, 7, or 8 years ago. A lot of people expected Alex Ovechkin to win a cup about a decade ago, and it hasn't happened. It's taken him 13 years to get to this point.
It's amazing looking back on some of the quotes from the hockey experts before the season about Vegas. ESPN's hockey analysis. A poker pro has a better chance of hitting a straight flush on the river than the Golden Knights have of making the playoffs.
Just making the playoffs, not making the Stanley Cup final.
And this is after the teams were drafted and they were constituted and everything.
USA Today, the Vegas Golden Knights can be better than we think, but they will make trades that will help their future and hurt their point total this season. The hockey news, the thin forward group and blue line leaves the Golden Knights without the requisite depth to fight their way out of the basement.
People are just taking the old standard expansion teams or poop
line. If Vegas is shooting for a top selection in next year's draft, they should be right on target.
Wow. Man, people missed
on
that.
Same thing with the Caps.
CBS Sports.
Same thing with the Caps.
CBS Sports on the Vegas Golden Knights. Outside of bringing life to the pure spectacle of pro hockey in Vegas, the Golden Knights can't be counted on for a whole lot. There's simply too much talent in the Pacific Division, not to mention every other division that boasts players who have, you know, had more than a few months to gel.
I mean, you understand why they took that position.
Oh, yeah. History. I mean, it's incredible to think, and I guess we know things are different, that the Capitals in their expansion year had 8 total wins in the season. Cakes mentioned this a couple days ago. And they had 12 just in the playoffs.
Well, it just doesn't make sense that,
just in the playoffs,
that you
got
could just
wins.
Pick from other teams' cast-offs. You know, how many guys were they able to protect? Were they able to protect like 20 guys?
It had to do with each positional group, too. Like you could protect however many forwards, defensemen, and goalies.
Right, right. There's a little subtlety to it, right? I remember that.
And they're being led by Fleury. I mean, his numbers during the regular season were really good. He had a 2.24 GAA, 92.7 save percentage. The save percentage has gone up to 94.7 in the playoffs and is 1.68 goals against. So hopefully, you know, the Caps, who are scoring right around 3.5 goals per game, they need to be more towards that number than 2 goals per game.
Here's the owner before the season of the Golden Knights.
Well, it was a quote from him back in August, and he says, "We don't have high expectations for the year. We're going to be competitive. If we're going to lose a game, we'd like to lose by a goal or two, not by 5 or 6. We don't want to be a walkover team. We want to be competitive." And then he says, hopefully in 5 to 6 years, we can make a playoff push.
And George McPhee said the same thing. He said, look, it's a long build. Don't expect instant success. But you know what? Give George McPhee a lot of credit, him and his staff, for what they've built there. Now, did they have advantages that the Caps didn't have back in 1974 when they put their roster together? Obviously. But it is a great story, but a better story is the Capitals winning the Stanley Cup, not the Vegas Golden Knights, who've had a franchise for all of one season.
So I don't really know who should be the favorite. My lean is towards the Capitals, but we just have, you know.
Who should be the favorite?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it be the Golden Knights of what they did in the regular season?
What Neil Greenberg is saying, that actually when you break down the teams, you compare
and their
them,
common
the Caps
opponents
have probably a little bit of an advantage.
The series price isn't necessarily who's better.
Right.
It's whose money they want.
Money is going to go on. I understand. Right. But I would still think that they would be, first of all, they've mowed through the playoffs and the way they had their regular season. I would still think just on paper they would be the favorites.
I want them
to be the favorites. I like being a dog as long as it's close. I don't want to be a huge underdog because then that means you're really not that close. Let's go to Andrew in Stafford. Andrew, what's up?
Morning, Junks.
Hey, Andrew.
Hey.
I'm so excited and scared for this whole next series, but I don't see how anybody can say they've got a read on who's going to be the better team. I mean, we're not supposed to be here. You just proved the Knights aren't supposed to be here, so this is a total, you know, fingernail bleeding, chewing series toss up in my mind.
Are you a big hockey head?
It was hard. I didn't watch as much regular season this year, but normally I pay pretty close attention, and then they're in the playoffs every single game.
Right.
Who should we be scared of on Vegas? Besides Marc-Andre Fleury. Who?
Besides him?
Yeah.
Carlson.
Okay.
On the top line.
He had 43 goals.
You know, he gets points and for himself and for other guys.
Got you.
So I think their top line's pretty well balanced, and that's going to be up to, you know, if Trotz puts Niskanen and Orlov on them, they're going to have their work cut out because somehow those guys clicked like a well-oiled machine in, you know, in less than a season.
Right, right. All right, thank
you, Andrew.
Here's my take on sort of the goaltending issue that always comes up, and certainly you need a hot goalie to win this, right? And it seems like both teams have hot goalies, so they have the requisite hot goalies. But even the hottest goalies in the world, there's only so much they can do. If you pepper them with enough shots, you get the rebounds, you get guys in front, you get them moving side to side, there's only so much they can do. They'll make some great saves, but if you keep moving those guys side to side, they can't cover, you know what I mean? You're going
to
break through.
But to me,
it's on you more than it is on them. It's on you. It's on what the Capitals do.
It's those one or two saves, which you don't necessarily expect. And, for example, Holtby in these last two games of the shutout, you know, he stopped a couple of breakaways.
He had
a couple of incredible...
They weren't necessarily incredible. He was in the right spot.
Right.
They were good technique.
But there are times when
angles.
He doesn't make those saves. Where maybe
but generally speaking, if you take the right angles, you play the correct technique, and you're not getting moved around side to side, you'll play okay.
Yeah, but there are times, I know, just watching the highlights, Fleury, for example, had one in, I guess it was the Western Conference Finals, where he stopped one on one side, then he dove to the other side.
Yeah, right, okay.
Those
that's
are
an
incredible
outlier.
Saves.
An
right.
Incredible side. It's an outlier.
That's the difference between a 92% save percentage and an 85% save percentage. It's one or two shots.
Right, so that's why I say you've got to be, you know, it's got to be a volume thing, too. It's just not from, you know, 50 yards away. It's going to be quality shots, get some rebounds, get guys in front, block his vision. They can all be solved,
all right,
is what I'm trying to say.
More Caps.
I hate going into a series scared of a goalie. That's freaking soft.
It's just the guy who's been carrying. He's had four shutouts in the playoffs.
Maybe Vegas should be scared of our goalie. He's been playing pretty damn well.
He's
back-to-back shutouts over the last two games.
He's played well,
Thank
too.
You.
Yeah. I get it.
That's how we count.
They've won 12 games. In one-third of them, their goalie's had a shutout. It's pretty good.
Yeah, well, I would argue that the teams aren't doing the right things then. Also.
All right. We will talk more. Caps, Vegas. Coming up at 8:40, Brett Connolly, right winger for the Capitals, will join us. But coming up next, Sean Devaney joins us. We'll talk about the NBA playoffs with him. Houston gets a win last night. Golden State on the brink of elimination. Keep it here. Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. Coming up at 8:40, Brett Connolly from the Caps will join us. Of course, they don't play till Monday night, Stanley Cup final. But we'll talk to the right winger coming up at 8:40. But joining us right now to talk some NBA playoffs, he joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, Sean Devaney, NBA writer for the Sporting News. Hey, Sean.
Hey, good morning.
What's up? Hey, before we get into the particulars of the two series going on right now, one of the guys here posits a theory that you should be rooting against Golden State. They're not likable, and his theory is most people are rooting against the Warriors, and I didn't necessarily feel that same way. What do you feel from the outside? Are they a hated team?
I mean, I think that changed when Kevin Durant signed there. I think that they used to be completely lovable, and all the kids wanted to be like Steph Curry. I think Kevin Durant going there, though, I think that did shift a lot of opinion against them. I think it's probably not to the level that we've seen other hated teams, you know, whether it's the Yankees or whoever it is. But yeah, I think there's definitely more of a movement, an anti-Warriors movement, just because people don't like the way that that Durant sort of joined up there, rather than you know, building his own team in Oklahoma City.
I do think the whole Hamptons Five thing, it's a little bit douchey, but everybody in the NBA could be part of a Hamptons Five.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they could do it over again, they would have met somewhere other than the Hamptons. You know, I mean, meeting the Bronx or something. Because if you're the Bronx Five, that sounds a little better than the Hamptons Five. You know, so maybe they should have just picked a different location.
Sean, do you buy into the narrative that Klay Thompson is going to leave like $50 or $60 million on the table to take less money from the Warriors after he's a UFA in 2019, or is he go to the highest bidder?
You know, I mean, he's putting out that signal. He's saying that that's what he's going to be willing to do. But, you know, the thing is, even if he does that, man, it's still going to be tough to keep all those guys together. It's you know, the Warriors are the other factor here. You know, will they decide to pay out that money? Because you know, they're going to be deep into the luxury tax. They're going to be you know, you have to, the luxury tax isn't a dollar for dollar thing. It's by the time you get to Klay Thompson's contract, it's going to be a dollar. Every dollar you're over is going to be like $5 that you're taxed. So if they're paying him you know, $15 million, let's say, which is pretty generous, that'll actually cost them significantly more. Cost them $75 million. So, you know, that's you have to take that into consideration. Now, I know they've got a new arena. I know they've said, you know, those guys got lots of money, and they've said we'll do whatever it takes to keep it together. But you start talking about, you know, paying $75 million for a guy you've signed for 15, you know, that's a different story.
All right, let's get into some of the particulars. I thought heading into the series that every game was going to be like 130 to 125. There have been some lower scoring games. How is Houston getting it done?
Yeah, they've been, you know, and you're right. I think a lot of people thought that, and certainly going by the way game one went, it seemed like this was going to be played at the Warriors' pace. The Warriors want to play fast. They want to get as many possessions as possible. They're a pretty efficient offensive team. So the more shots that they can get up, that's better for them. Houston has done a really good job, especially these last two games, slowing that pace down and using up more of the clock. And that's sort of antithetical to what you think of when you think of Mike D'Antoni. But you know, they've given their defense a real chance this whole season, and they're doing it now. So yeah, to be able to use more clock, you know, limit the Warriors in the fast break, just really kind of drag the game out a little bit and limit that number of possessions that the Warriors would rather see much higher. That's what Houston's been able to do here.
Joined by Sean Devaney, NBA writer for the Sporting News. What is the word on Chris Paul? I'm sure it's nebulous, but if they don't have Chris Paul these last two games, it's a totally different series.
Yeah, and I wonder what they're going to do if they're not 100% sure that he's going to be able to go. You know, first off, they don't have – I mean, we've seen even when he's healthy, they've gone seven deep, and that's, you know, 15 to 19 minutes from Gerald Green, and that's about it. You know, they go Eric Gordon and a little bit of Gerald Green, and that's it. So if they've got to get somebody off the bench, I don't know there's anybody that they really trust. Especially the way they would trust Chris Paul. So then the question becomes, okay, he's got this hamstring issue. You can play through a hamstring, but you know, if you're not 100%, what do you do? Do you force him out there for game six and have him try to play on one leg? Or do you say, you know what, if we have to give away game six, we give it away. Let's rest him up and see if he can be ready for game seven on Monday. So that's going to be a tough decision. You know, the way a hamstring, the only thing you can do with the hamstring really is rest. And you just don't have time for that.
Joined by Sean Devaney, NBA writer for the Sporting News. You know, I'm a sad Wizards fan during the playoffs, watching these other teams advance, you know, playing into June. How does Ernie Grunfeld find a guy like a Clint Capella, who was drafted 25th overall by Houston in 2014? He's turned into a walking double-double, a guy who's going to swat two shots per game. How do the Wiz stumble upon a guy like that and groom him and develop him and turn him into a really serviceable player?
Well, they've got Ion Mahimi. What are you saying?
No, I mean,
I mean, a lot of teams passed on Capella, obviously, but I mean, a guy like that takes patience, and he had a couple of years where he didn't do much of anything, and they were patient with him and they developed him. That's something that you see so often in the league where you get a guy who's got some talent, and the team just doesn't bother to develop him, and doesn't get him to the point where he's able to contribute. Now Capella's been just a great story because he's doing more than just contributing. He's really lifted himself into one of the better centers in the league. That's not going to be the case with everybody. But a good example, say a guy like Bismack Biyombo. You remember with the Raptors, he had a great postseason. Really kind of had a great year with Toronto that year. I mean, he was in Charlotte for 4 or 5 years, and Charlotte didn't do anything with him. They didn't figure out what he was, what he was capable of. You get a lot of guys like that, and Houston's done a great job developing the guys that they've got and really giving them a shot. And Capella's a good example of that.
Now, Sean, I saw that you wrote in the Sporting News that it's easy to imagine that this could be the final weekend of the second act of LeBron James' Cleveland Cavaliers. Kind of go into that. There's some people saying that he looks tired in the series. Even Tyronn Lue, I think, after Game 5 said that he looked tired. I could easily see him leading Cleveland to wins here in Game 6 and 7, and then kind of the story fades. But what do you see here with LeBron and Cleveland?
Yeah, and you're right that it certainly looks a certain way right now, but we could get to Sunday night and they win these next two games and you kind of forget about all that. But yeah, I mean, they're asking too much of him. I mean, the trades they made way back at the trade deadline when they brought in, Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance and George Hill, it just hasn't worked out. It looked so good in the beginning with those guys. But here we are, Hood played 2 minutes of garbage time in game five. Nance was pretty good. George Hill was pretty awful in game five and Clarkson as well. So, you brought in these guys to really help boost his chances here and take some pressure off him. But they just haven't panned out. So you've had more and more pressure on him. And he's got to rely on guys like J.R. Smith way more than you'd like to see him. It's LeBron's been in a tough position. He's answered the call. There's no question that he's stepped up and played the minutes and played pretty well. There isn't the supporting cast there. And you do wonder if that leads him to say, I'm out of here when he has the chance on July 1st.
The amazing thing is that Boston's up 3-2 without Gordon Hayward, who's been, of course, gone the whole season, and then without Kyrie Irving. What happens next year to that team? I almost feel like Jason Tatum is already better than what Gordon Hayward was. It's probably not fair, but Jason Tatum obviously has proven himself. Who do they move to the bench?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. There's 29 other teams that would love to have the problem of, geez, we've got too much talent. What are we going to do? They're going to have to sort some things out. Where does Tatum fit in on the sort of on the scoring totem pole? Does he become the number three option, behind Kyrie and Gordon Hayward? Because he certainly looks like he should be better than the third option. It's going to be a little bit of a challenge for them. Terry Rozier, what happens with him? He has proven that he can be an NBA starter, but you're going to have Kyrie Irving playing 35, 36 minutes a game. Would Rozier be okay with going back to 10 to 12 minutes a game? I don't think so. I'm sure that they're going to explore some moves. There's probably some a trade to be had out there. I don't think Tatum would go, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them looking at possibly dealing Rozier and possibly maybe even Jaylen Brown. I think they'd want a pretty good return for Jaylen Brown, but he's certainly somebody they could consider shopping as well.
Sean, last question. Cakes mentions the Wizards, and they're in this tough spot where they're sort of stuck in mediocrity. I mean, they make the playoffs, but win 45 win games. They've got the three max contract guys. What can they do? I mean, is this just sort of their fate? I mean, who's the most movable of any of them? Are there teams out there that would take these salaries?
No, there really aren't. I mean, you know, Otto Porter is probably the most movable guy there. You know, obviously they've been trying to move Marcin Gortat for better than a year now, and that hasn't worked out. Porter is the guy I think most teams would be most interested in, but you know, he's got I think it's like $80 million over 3 years, and that's a lot for Otto Porter. So it's really tough. You know, they unfortunately had all these contracts come up at a time when the NBA had that TV money coming in and teams were giving out big deals. And now that TV money isn't there anymore and teams are getting a little tighter, you know, the Wizards are sitting with all these contracts on their books and, you know, you can't go back and redo them. So, they're in a tough spot. You know, as far as what they should do, what they can do, hard to say. I mean, it's, you know, I think you probably need a change in the front office, but that hasn't, they've given no indications that that's coming. So, I think you just kind of ride it out with what you got.
All right, Sean, appreciate the time. It's Sean Devaney. You can check him out, Sporting News. Appreciate the time.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Sean.
All right. Coming up next, we mentioned the Richie Incognito story, which is a wacky, wacky story. The former, NFL offensive lineman, basically, thought he was basically hearing voices or who knows what he was doing.
Well, wasn't he allegedly trying to come back into the league after he was released by the Bills?
I think that's over now.
And he had an incident in Florida in a gym where he was allegedly throwing like a dumbbell at this guy who was wearing headphones. The guy wearing headphones, his name's Mark O'Brien. And what was he listening to at the time? The Junkies.
Oh, you're kidding.
We'll talk to him next here on The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.